Most likely, Bach wrote these books of preludes and fugues because he liked to do one of everything. He had a predisposition towards writing encyclopedic works, and thank goodness he did. The Preludes and Fugues of the Well-Tempered Clavier, books 1 and 2, become a biblical resource for Mozart, for Beethoven, for Schumann, for Brahms, and just about all of us who come after. All right, please, the Bach Fugue in C minor, Well-Tempered Clavier, book 1, circa 1722. First, we must spend a moment analyzing the subject. I told you before, fugue subjects are not ordinary themes. Rather, they have certain characteristics that allow them to do certain things. When I taught fugue, and I taught fugue for a number of years, we spent the great bulk of the semester, after learning basic technique, learning how to write a good fugue subject. Because if you can write a fugue subject that will work in canon with itself, that will work in invertible counterpoint, that will be diminuted and augmented, if you can pre-design a fugue subject to do all of these things, the actual creation of the fugue is the easiest thing in the whole world. It becomes an explanation. You simply show, during the course of the fugue, all the things you can do with the subject. So, here's the subject. Listen again. What have we got? First, we've got a very motivic melody, a very clearly motivic melody. What's the motive? This idea. We hear that idea 3 times. It's recognizable enough to be recognizable, but it's simple enough that it will allow itself to be stacked on itself. What else have we got? We've got a composite melody, and this is subtle, and I'd love to take more time on it, but I can't take too much time on it. But I will show you what I mean by composite melody. Even as we have the motive repeating itself a total of 3 times, there is one moving note creating what sounds like a different melodic idea. Listen. I'll do that again. This single fugue subject carries within it the seeds of 2 different melodic ideas, one falling idea and then that repeated motive, which we hear over and over again. I would point out the motoric nature of the rhythms. That's not a pejorative. It simply addresses the Baroque nature of this rhythm. Very motoric, very even. Ba-da-dum-bum-bum, ba-da-dum-bum-bum, ba-da-dum-bum, ba-da-dum. This will allow Bach to create canons. Ba-da-dum-bum-bum-bum. So during the spaces in one statement of the theme, of the subject, he will be able to insert, canonically, another version of the theme. The spaces and the motive alternate in such a way that he can create all kinds of canons with himself, if he so chooses. Also, there is a regularity of harmony, and that will also allow him to do all kinds of overlapping games. All right, enough. What I want us to do is listen to the exposition of this fugue. The voice order of entry is alto, soprano, and then bass. What I want you to be aware of in this listening are the following things. First, the familiar telescopic effect of a fugal exposition with each voice coming in turn. I want you to hear the alto is first, then higher the soprano, then they kind of solo together for a moment, a brief little episode, and then finally the bass comes in. I want you to notice that once the bass has sung the fugue subject, clunk, the exposition is over, and the party has begun. Everyone is here. Please, let's listen, and let us also note that we're hearing this played by a harpsichord. One more thing to think about while we listen to this. Why is the harpsichord the perfect instrument for a fugue? Brief episode. Here comes the bass. Bass. Why is the harpsichord the perfect instrument for fugue? Because it is. It's the perfect marriage of instrument and genre.